Hi, this is Herb Cox of the Cleftones, and you're listening to my good buddy Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Jimmy Clanton, and you are listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest R&B royalty, a member of the R&B royal family, Mr. Gene Chandler. How you doing, Gene?
I'm doing fantastic, and I hope everybody else is doing the same.
Oh, I'm sure. It's a great day in Florida. It's not raining today, which is terrific, you know?
Yeah.
In other parts of the country, they have snow. Some of them have earthquakes, but we have trees that go sideways. So it's a whole different deal down here.
Right.
But you were born in Chicago, which was a great place to be born. A lot of talent and a lot of terrific creative people came out of Chicago. Did you have brothers and sisters growing up?
Well, yeah, I had some half-brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh. Were they musical?
No.
No. Okay, so I understand that you sang Danny Boy at a picnic one day, and everybody said, wow. So that was probably the beginning of your singing out in public and becoming a professional.
Yeah, I think I was around 5 or 6 years old.
That's an early time to go. I didn't have the guts to do that at that age. It took me till I was 9 or 10.
I didn't know what guts were. I was a kid.
You just ran out and you did it.
Yeah, I mean, the parents told me to go up there and sing it because I was always singing it at home.
Yeah, very cool. Were you tall as a kid? Because I know you look like a forward now when I stand next to you.
Normal. I'm 6'1" now.
Right.
But no more than normal kids. I mean, I was, whatever height it was, I didn't pay much attention to it.
Yeah.
I was just growing up. That's all.
And the other thing that people know about Gene Chandler, if they know him well or even if they've been a great fan of his for years, is that his smile goes from one end of the stage to the other. And that's something that lights people up the minute you walk out on stage. A smile is just a smile to behold. That's a wonderful thing.
Yes, I never noticed it until someone told me about it. It was just my natural smile, but I'm glad it makes people feel good and kind of wake them up, and hope they enjoy the show. And they seem like they do with the standing ovation. So.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Your act is very unique, and we'll talk about that later. You're in Englewood High School, and you won a contest. You were with a group called the Gaytones.
Correct.
Right. Tell me a little bit about that group. That was just a high school group, used to do high school dances?
Yeah, I was in the school, and I was singing with some other little group. We had named ourselves. Just each day, when we had the opportunity, we'd get together and blow some harmony. And
right.
The guys in the Gaytones came over to me and asked me would I be their lead singer.
Cool.
And so, of course, I did, and we ended up working in the school, and I won the, the school contest. And then we performed against all of the other schools that had won.
Ah.
And that, we won the citywide.
Wow.
And from there, I guess it was the DJ that took us around and put us on radio singing.
Right.
And things of that nature.
Yeah, that's very cool because I had a high school group too, and you get a lot of attention and everything else. But like I was a shy kid, getting up and being able to sing on stage and actually get up and talk on stage kind of gave me the juice that I needed to go forth. It didn't come easy. For some people, it did.
Well, for most young men, like myself at the time and like you at the time, it was the girls.
Oh, absolutely.
The song for the girls.
Absolutely you did. And guys were jealous. I'd get up there with the guitar, I'd get up and we'd do the dance and everything else. And everybody wants the lead singer. It's like, sorry, that's just how it is.
I had to lead the Gaytones.
Right.
Because how I got with the Duques, and I don't know if you were going to ask me that question.
Right, of course I was. And the next group that you joined were the Duques. And why don't you tell us about the Duques?
Yeah, I didn't stay with the Gaytones very long. We did the radio things. We had a little club that we did on Sundays as well. And the next thing I know, of course, the Duques were in my neighborhood where I live. And I wasn't really aware of them. And they call. Got to me and asked me why was I singing with a group outside when there was a good group in the neighborhood where I lived, and so on and so forth. Anyway, make a long story short, I ended up leaving the Gaytones and joining the Duques.
Uh-huh. And, of course, Don Riggio is a good friend of mine as well as yours. You know, he has his book, 7-Inch Vinyl, which has done very well. And, of course, his fictional group is the Duquesnes, which is very close. And we talked about it the other day. He said, you know, how about that? I just picked that name out of the air, and it's almost the same group that Gene Chandler sang with. It's very interesting. He's actually writing a sequel. I'm going to do the foreword. And between you and I, this is a secret, but I'll out it right now. There's a fictional group, but there's also a fictional hit tune. So one day I said to him, you know, there should be a tune. And he said, yeah, why don't you write it? And I said, okay, I accept. I will. So over the last couple of weeks, I've been sitting in front of my Pro Tools, knocking my head against the wall, trying to come up with this tune. And sometimes it flows, and sometimes it doesn't. We'll see what happens when it all shakes down.
Right.
You know, it should be good. The Duques, that was James Lowe. So Shirley Johnson, Earl Edwards, Benjamin Broyles, the Duques. Do you still talk to them?
No, I haven't talked to them in quite a few years. Of course, I'm moving in different circles and doing what I do on top of my business interests across the country, and so I'm always gone all the time.
Right. Well, we can talk about that, too, because I understand you're taking over the world, not just vocally, but in other ways, too.
Doing my best.
Well, I understand you're doing a pretty good job. So here you are singing with the Duques.
Yeah, I was doing good with the Duques, singing around at the local clubs and local cabarets.
Right.
And different other cabarets would hire. Sometimes we had two or three shows a night. We'd make $10, $15 per man.
Right. Which was a lot in those days.
Oh, yes. Extra on if you had a job that you went to work to during the week.
I know.
And so this was extra added money, so that was a lot of money.
Absolutely.
I decided I would go into service for various reasons we won't discuss at the moment.
Okay.
But I decided I would go to the service, so I actually volunteered.
Oh.
That's why I had 3 years. When they draft you, you had 2 years.
Yeah, I do know that when you sign up. And then you take the... Well, years ago, during my time with the Vietnam War and all of that, you know, and you took the test for officers' candidate school, and if you were lucky, they made you an MP, and you went to Germany instead of Vietnam. That's the way I remember it.
I also went to Germany.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I served 3 years in the Airborne Ranger. My second 8 weeks, which was airborne training, actually was in Germany.
Oh, wow. Did you ever jump out of a plane?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, better you than me.
Every chance I had, I jumped.
Wow.
It was $50 per jump.
Isn't that something? That's amazing. Because, you know, now at this later stage in life, my wife and I keep saying, let's do something exciting. You know, let's do that parachute thing. And then, you know, we think about it and then we say, nah.
Right. So see, that was then. I was young.
Yeah.
I was adventurous. I went in with a bunch of other guys, and we wanted to go airborne.
Right.
We wanted to go in somewhere where it was tough. Was either the Marines, the Navy, or the Navy SEALs, or the Airborne Rangers. And the extra money for jumps, I took Airborne Rangers. And, you know, I'm not that necessarily crazy about water.
Right.
I can swim.
I hear you.
But I didn't think I wanted to deal with that. And then that was the Marines. They're the first on the beach. And, of course, we dropped from the sky behind the line. So, but I just thought that was more exciting and actually was extra money involved in it. And so I went airborne.
Now, isn't that something?
Would I do it? Absolutely not.
I don't want my heart to beat that fast anymore.
Absolutely not. You know, I was young then.
Yeah.
It worked out. It worked well.
Oh, that's a fabulous story. I mean, I don't think anybody knew that about you, you know. So the Duques were now using another lead singer.
Correct.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then the time came when it was time for me to come home. And I think approximately 2 months before coming home, the Duques finally got a recording contract.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And they asked them, would they wait until I came home, because I was their original lead singer.
Right.
They said, well, we'd like the guy that's with you. What's so different about the new one? They said, we'd please like for you to wait, because he wouldn't even understand it if we just signed a contract 2 months before he come home.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I came home, and I sung with the group. At that time, it was Carl Davis and Bill Bunky Shepherd.
Uh-huh.
They owned the company called Nat Records.
Right.
And they signed, they loved what they heard, so they took me instead, and that was how the Duques got their first recording contract.
Right.
Fortunate. And for one thing, while in the service, I sung in special service at officers' clubs, and I did it as a single.
Wow, that's great.
And I was crazy about that. I said, oh, I love this.
Uh-huh.
What I'm going to do when I get home. I wasn't planning on getting with a group. But, of course, I'm not crazy. They had a recording contract.
No, there you go. That's a good start, you know.
On the group, you know.
Yeah, that's fabulous. So, The Girl is a Devil.
That was the very first record that was released from the Nat label.
But, you know, of course, that's much better than not selling any records. And that's, you know, a lot of people don't understand. You sign a record contract. A lot of groups in those days thought, wow, look what I did. But that was only the beginning of something. It was not the end of anything because a lot of groups signed. And then, of course, they had a minor hit or maybe nothing happened or they put their energy into a different group. But, you know, just having the contract for a young guy in those days was a fantastic thing. I know I did that when I was young, and I thought I conquered the world, and it kind of fizzled. You know, the first one is you can't run away if the first isn't a hit. You got to hang in there, you know.
Of course not. So then came the second recording session. By that time, I had written The Duke of Earl, and it simply came together in a rehearsal. I wasn't intending to write a song.
Right.
We were only opening up our throats for the rehearsal.
I hear you.
And the guys were saying, do, D-O, do, 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 and going up the scale,
uh-huh.
Began to clown with it.
Right.
And I told the guys to say Duke instead of do. We began to harmonize with the D-O.
Right.
And I don't know, I thought about England. And the guy in the group, his name was Earl, and that reminded me of something in England. Of course, we know there's an Earl and there's Duke.
Right.
And I began to put lyrics to it. And then the verse came and the chorus.
Wow.
And that's how it developed. My mother, she was in the house. She came to the rehearsal where we were at in the back room, and she said, "When did you put that together?" I said, "Just now." She said, "That sounds good." So our manager stayed about five blocks away. We ran around to her house from mine,
right.
And she changed one line in the song. She asked me, would it be okay if she put the line in? And I don't even remember what we took out, but the line she put in was, "We'll walk through my dukedom.
Ah, yes.
Paradise we will share."
Well, you know, I will tell you that the only time I've ever said the word dukedom is in dealing with the song Duke of Earl, and I've never said it again afterwards. So that's a word you don't hear that often, but I'm sure it would be a great Scrabble word.
Yeah, because, I mean, I used it for the reasons I use it for. Yeah. My home is my dukedom.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's what your home is, too, if you want to call it your dukedom.
You bet it is. Is a dukedom better than a palace? Or is that like
I think so, because I got a dukedom.
There you go. I got you. I hear you now. I hear you. Yeah, well, you know, that's...
I'm not too much into mansions and all of that space. And,
yeah.
But I don't need all of that.
Yeah,
know?
But that dukedom is a good real estate word, too.
Yeah.
My wife, Paulette, is a broker, you know.
Oh,
and
okay.
That means that for the last 2 years, she's been, like, semi-retired, so...
Yeah, but things are picking up.
Yes, they are. Oh, yeah.
You have to learn how to go with the flow.
I hear you.
We don't want to get into real estate.
Nah, later. We'll talk about that.
There's a lot of things that are happening that you move toward that, and then people come for that, you know.
I know, and it's all going to get better.
I didn't want to record the song in the next session.
Right.
Because I thought we needed strings. That's what I heard in my ears. I put the song together.
Okay.
And we went round and round with that, to make a long story short. I finally sung the song for Carl and Bill, and when we finished singing the song, they said, "Well, if you don't put that in recording session, you're not going to record at all."
I hear you.
That was a big argument about that. I finally gave in, and we did Duke of Earl.
Duke, 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 Duke of Earl, 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 Duke, 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 Duke of Earl, Duke, Duke, Duke of Earl,
as I walk through this world, nothing can stop the Duke of Earl. And you are my girl, and no one can hurt you. Oh no, yes I Duchess of Earl. We'll walk through my dukedom, and the paradise we will share. Yes, I
I remember that song.
A Night Owl. And they turned down the Duke.
10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock, 11:30, curfew time. Night Owl strolling down the street about to break up. Oh, a Night Owl.
out your mind and you heard a curfew time. Whoa, whoa, night owl. Such a silly jerk, daddy ought to make you work. Whoa, whoa, night owl. Such a silly jerk, your daddy ought to make you work. Whoa, whoa, night owl.
Well, Carl and Bill needed money to do the recording, so they had sold the publishing for Night Owl to VJ Records.
Right, and a lot of people don't understand how that works, but I've heard so many stories like that.
Yeah, well, it's just very simple. There's a publishing company for a song, or if you don't have a publishing company, you can lease it or sell it to somebody else who has a publishing company.
Right.
In this case, they needed money, and so the publishing on a song is very valuable because you make money on that.
Oh, absolutely.
Who does it or where it goes. And so consequently, it could last forever. If it hit now, it may take off again later on, whatever. As long as it's selling, you're making publishing.
That's true.
And that's the way the writer gets paid, just in case some people don't know.
Right.
Through publishing. If the song makes 100% in publishing, 50 of it goes to the writer and 50 goes to the publisher.
Right. I've been there.
Very brief about it. Okay. So in any event, they wanted to hear what it sounded like. And so they heard it and they said, God, that sounds good. The next thing they wanted to know, what else did you record? And when they played the rest, they said, well, who owns that song?
What right.
To do? And they said, nobody. They said, well, can we buy it from them? They said, yeah, but it's the same lead singer with on both songs.
Right.
And, of course, they came to me and asked me to make a decision whether I would leave the group and go with VJ and the Duke of Earl or stay with the group, and they would put somebody else with the song that I was singing.
I hear you.
So that fever of wanting to be a single artist, and I had another label would sign me up.
Right.
I, of course, left and went with the Duke of Earl record at VJ. I figured even if it didn't hit, that there would be an entire album that I have a chance to do a lot of songs.
Yeah, fabulous, fabulous.
Right. And then next to that, but it was a chance taker because the Night Owl had already been released. It was heading up the charts, our very first chart record. So, of course, we were excited.
Right.
And now here I am talking about leaving for a record that had not even been released.
Right.
But, you know, if you got faith in yourself, and I believed in what I was doing, and I figured I would get myself another record.
Well, and it turned out to be one of the greatest hooks of all time.
And it did. And
yep.
So it went out there, and, of course, the rest is history.
Oh, absolutely. Now, a million records in 1 month. I mean, nobody does that. That's got to make you say, hey, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable the way people were wearing top hats and capes when I would go to an engagement at a concert. But, gosh, it was really something. Of course, I thought it was sort of like normal.
Right.
And it was for a hit record.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it happened so fast. I was doing a movie, Don't Knock the Twist.
Right.
A whole bunch of other things just fell in, and it just took off. And from there, I had to start thinking about what I was going to follow up with or what was my next recording session going to be and a whole bunch of other things.
Right, right, right. I understand that. But, you know, the Duke thing now, there's a story that I know why don't you tell us this story of the hat, the cane, the cape. By the way, I think that hat, that original hat, should be actually on display in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's my feeling, but we could talk about that later. How did that come about, the cape and the hat?
I have my own Hall of Fame.
Okay. There you go. Okay, that's even better.
I got the first hat, the second hat, and I'm on the third one. That's in 50 years.
Hey, Gene, all good answers, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I got those tucked away. And I have the original cape, of course.
Wow.
Yeah, I was offered $50,000 for that.
Oh, I can imagine.
This guy, he has these concerts he put on, and he has all these people come in buying for this benefit and auction. And he just knew he could get, well, of course, he's going to get more than that for it.
Right.
But that's what I was offered.
Wow.
Of course, I turned it down, but in any event.
Wow, that's...
And also for my gold record for the Duke of Earl, which is original within itself.
Right.
Because they used to be on wood.
Yeah.
As opposed to in the encasing, in the glass, and et cetera.
Right, right.
And I was offered $25 for that. I turned that down, you know. But in any event.
It's amazing how many artists don't have their gold records. You know, if you talk to Roz and Annette from, you know, the original Vandellas, they said to me, we don't even have our gold records. You know, Barry never got us our records. And I said, you know, well, you need to call him. It's amazing. Why should you not?
Well, somebody there. I don't understand why they never got it.
Who knows? There's a lot of people walking around there.
All those years went by and they didn't get it or ask for it.
Who knows? You know, it's like everybody's got a different story. But not everybody is Gene Chandler and is on top of their game.
So we went on. I went on from there to, of course, I was successful with the Duke. And there were other records that came from Curtis Mayfield. He kept me alive for a long time.
Right. Well, you know, just knowing Curtis and being in the same room with that kind of creativity and being creative with him is glorious because, it's Curtis Mayfield. I mean, my goodness. So, you know, that's a wonderful experience.
Something I want to, because I was trying to go step by step.
Yeah.
Let me back up a little bit and then
sure.
I'll come back to Curtis. There was something that was significant at the time. When VJ, the A&R director, which was Calvin Carter,
right.
His sister on the label, her and her husband, she
uh-huh.
was Vivian Carter, and that was the V and the VJ.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy was the other name, which was the husband, and so that was called VJ. But anyway, he was an A&R director. So in order to get the Duke of Earl Redicott to buy it, he had to call Abner, who happened to be out of town at the time, Hewitt Abner, who was the one who was running VJ Records for Vivian and Jimmy.
Right.
He was the president. He was in Europe at the time making the first deal for the Beatle Records.
Uh-huh.
VJ had the first Beatle Records in America.
That's right. They were on VJ.
Right.
That's right.
The difference is that they didn't have the same money Capitol had to do all that big promotion thing.
Gotcha.
When Capitol, what they did was lease certain songs. And then Capitol, of course, made a bigger deal, and they end up signing the group to their label.
Right.
But I thought that was significant because VJ had done that with the Beatles. They had the first Beatle record.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've seen record companies buy up another whole record company entity just to get a hold of a group or a song.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that happened all the time. People don't really know about that.
Calvin Carter put the record out. And I'm sitting on pins and needles because by this time, Night Owl is a hit record.
Right.
And but it took off, and as you know, the rest is history. It was everywhere, and it took off and went pop. It was the very first million seller for VJ Records.
Right.
The closest they had come to a million seller was D. Clark's Raindrops.
Uh-huh.
That was the closest they ever
Which
came somewhere.
Wasn't about. A bad tune, you know. Now, were you on tour with him as well?
We did some shows together. Of course, the Impressions were there, Jerry Butler,
gotcha.
The Dales, a whole bunch of people
well,
were at.
Boy, that's a room full of talent. tell me about the song Kissing in the Kitchen.
Kissing in the kitchen.
Kissing in the kitchen.
Kissing in the kitchen,
kissing in the kitchen,
kissing in the kitchen. Someone will be missing over you.
In the kitchen, in the kitchen.
A sitting and a wishing I was missing in the kitchen with you.
In the kitchen,
woo. Now where the poop day Halloween party that a friend of mine had. They were playing those stories and I driving me mad. They were kissing in the kitchen, it's the way I'm kept. You kept on calling, I'll be back. A kissing in the kitchen, someone will be missing. Over you
in the kitchen, woo!
Now baby, I know that you are having fun, but tell that guy you're not the only one. Cause this kissing in the kitchen, girl, is driving me mad. If he call you back, it's gonna be too bad. A kissing in the kitchen, someone will be missing. Over you
in the kitchen, woo!
Gotcha.
She was the one writing songs. I'm not really what you would call a writer, but at times I was inspired to write a few things or be involved in writing some things, and
right.
That's how that came about. But Bernice Reagan was the one who was writing her. The Night Owl was her record, as well as The Kissing in the Kitchen.
Right.
And
right.
We decided to put it on the flip side, and that's how it happened.
Right. You know, talking about the hook, Duke of Earl, I mean, it's been used in so many different ways by so many other groups. It's been used outside of the music field. As a matter of fact, even Steely Dan used the hook in one of their tunes.
Now, did you say you were from the Netherlands? Was that Netherworld? You grew up in Amsterdam. Damn, you know that I'm the Duke of Earl. Now these times look iffy, you say they're good. Let's roll with the homies and knock on wood.
That Duke of Earl hook is just, it's become part of Americana now, which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I never had an idea, not the slightest idea that that record would be as big as it is today. I never thought about it at the time, but I'm certainly grateful that I have it, and I feel very blessed.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's the type of thing you could listen to over and over. And not only that, if you turn on an oldie station anywhere in this country, be it Sirius, be it terrestrial radio, be it internet radio or whatever, you probably don't have to listen more than 8 or 9 minutes before you hear Duke of Earl. I mean, that's just how it is. It's on everybody's top 10 list, and you can't say it enough. It's just been just a wonderful tune.
About the get up, the top hat, the cape, the cane, and everything. That wasn't the way they wanted me to look. They wanted me to look like the Minutemen, you know, Paul Revere.
Right.
They had the white stockings on me up to the knees,
right,
and the black pants from the knees up. They had the blouse shirt with the short jacket.
Right.
And they gave me a triangle hat.
Yeah, what did they know?
And they wanted to put a gray wig on me. I said, whoa, when I saw the first tape, which I have, and I've kept it all of these decades, I got the negative. I took the negative. I look like Paul Revere.
Uh-huh.
They had me holding the triangle hat in front of my midsection, like Napoleon had his hand in it. They had me to hold the hat like that with my shoulders straight up, and I look Edwardian.
Yeah. Well, you know, at 6'1" with the triangle hat and everything else. Well, let me tell you that the top hat and the cane and the cape work much better. And you know, as we talked about a couple of days ago, you know, we've done shows together, and I've seen you from the audience, from the side of the stage, from the back of the stage, and that coming down the aisle through the audience with the strut, cane, and the hat is just something that's a fantastic thing. Everybody waits for that. But, you know, the other thing I asked you was, you've worked in venues where it took a long time because of the logistics to get down, and the band had a vamp for quite a long time, and then you told me a story about getting locked out of the room once.
What happened is it was one of those big coliseums, big stadiums.
Right.
And I don't care what size it is, I go to the front, and I run. Of course, a lot of times I'm out of breath, but I'm moving. And I get down to this door that's supposed to take me out into the front lobby, and it was locked, and it was supposed to have been open.
Right.
And we're banging on the door, and everybody's wondering what's going on and where is he at.
Right.
Anyway, it was one of those kind of things, and we finally got the door open, and I got out and came down the aisle.
Yeah, that's cool, but I could see how that could happen. And by the way, you know, as coincidence would have it, the other night they reran your performance on PBS.
Oh, okay.
And let me tell you, man, I mean, just note for note, perfect, 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 what a performance that was. Because you kind of take over the stage. We're going to talk about some of your R&B stuff as well, because people that haven't heard the Gene Chandler archives of R&B, it's a totally different world than Duke of Earl, and it's just such wonderful stuff. I mean, but let's talk about Curtis Mayfield for a while. Tell me about the Rainbow Tune.
Well, I was on the road doing some shows, and of course, Curtis was on the show, and he was playing these songs in the basement. He said, I got some songs I want to play for you. He said, I don't know, you doing like the lollipop type of thing with
right.
I don't know if it'll fit, but I got some songs. So I listened, and of course, Curtis was writing exactly what I love. I love slow songs, and I love them when they have a lot of feeling and lyrics that have
right.
a lot of meaning, and it was right up my alley. So I ended up picking Rainbow at that particular time. Of course, throughout the years, he did the same thing a lot of times when I picked songs, but that's how I picked Rainbow and I think one or two other songs.
Right.
After they finished with Walk On with the Duke, they wanted to try to follow the Duke in that kind of manner. I didn't like those particular tunes, but I did it because the record company wanted me to do them, and I figured they might know best, and even though I didn't believe in them, but I did them. And,
of course,
they didn't go big. So I finally did this song of Curtis Mayfield, and it was Rainbow.
There's a rainbow in my heart. Of a high we parted, and I know my love is gone forever, but deep down.
Forever.
don't you hear me calling, baby? Please stop this rainbow.
Rainbow just happened to be my second best song of all time behind Duke of Earl.
Wow. Well, now, were those the impressions on the record with you in the background?
The very first one was the impression.
Yeah, wow.
They didn't want me to do the song, let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
They told me that the song went too long before the break,
before
the chorus, and I didn't know what that meant. All I know is I loved the song.
Yeah, well, they were always worried about whether DJs would throw it on because they only wanted their records to be 2.5 to 3 minutes, you know, and
right.
You know, I hear you.
And the other thing was, so I said to them, listen, if you don't like it, make it the B-side. When they finally agreed to do it, and I did it, now it's time to pick the single. And they were going with You Threw a Lucky Punch,
uh-huh.
Which was a Mary Wells, answer to Mary Wells. So
right.
That day, oh yeah, when you walk away, I wanted to call you back, but I didn't know what to say. But when you said you had to part, something hit me all at once. Love walked right in and caught me by surprise. Cause you threw a lucky punch. Little girl, you threw a lucky punch. That's right, you threw a lucky punch. When I saw you for the very first time, I wanted to love you and leave you behind. Until you put me down, I had won every round, but something hit me all at once. Girl, I never thought you would open my door. You threw a lucky punch. Little girl, you threw a lucky punch. You threw a lucky punch. Since I love you, let me prove my love is true and love you tender. Oh, please, baby, surrender. I've been a playboy, it's true, but I'm hanging up my heart for you. So I guess I'll wait around, tears falling down, hoping you change your heart and realize I need you by my side. Cause you threw a lucky punch. Little girl, you hit me in my heart. It was a TKO. You made me love you so. You hit me left, right, left, knocked me down, oh girl. Your love is so bad.
And okay, I said, we'll just throw Duke of Earl on the back. I hit the road, and I would never sing You Threw a Lucky Punch, even though it was going up the charts. I kept singing Rainbow.
Uh huh.
And they kept, the crowd would say more and more, and they would call me back. And I began to embellish on it, which is a little bit I'm going to give you in a minute.
Right.
But I like to say, I was at the Howard Theater, and I get the phone call from Carl Davis, and he said, well, I guess you got your wish. I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, Rainbow turned You Threw a Lucky Punch over in Newark, New Jersey, and they turned it over in Richmond, Virginia. I never forget him saying that.
Wow.
And he said, the song Rainbow, the phones lit up.
Wow.
So Rainbow is what we're going with now.
Right. And when you say, you know, you turned it over, that means that a DJ said, hey, let's see what's on the other side of this record. And they play the B-side. And that's happened a few times in our modern musical history. And I guess this was one of those times.
Yep. Song took off. And in 1965, we had been doing it since 63, and of course we had been down to embellish on the because everywhere I went they said more and more, and I came back out
right.
The more, so I began to make up things for the part two.
I got you.
So when they recorded it live and they heard how the audience was reacting, the women were screaming and the words they were saying, they said, why don't we try to release this again and call it Rainbow Live Part 2, 1965.
Right.
And so I said, gosh, we just, can you do that? And they said, of course we can do that.
Yeah.
So they put it out. It took off again.
That time at the Regal, young man went out and made a name for himself. Has been on every record-breaking show in the Regal Theater in the last 2 years. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of our show, how about a nice warm round of applause to welcome Mr. Gene Chandler!
Thank you so very much. I'm down on my knees. Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Please listen to my plea. Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm looking up above. Oh yes, up above.
I'm asking you to give me one more chance, just for one more chance to prove to you. I bet I know I was wrong. And I realize now, baby, and I realize now, baby, that love only comes once, and when it comes, you better grant. 'Cause it may not come no more. And I'm asking you, baby, 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 I'm asking you,
so good to me, baby. You look so good this evening, baby. Sometimes when I look out at you, baby, I feel like I just wanna reach out. I just wanna reach out. I wanna reach out, baby. I just wanna reach out. I wanna reach out and And I just wanna ask you one thing, baby. And I just wanna ask you one thing, baby. I just wanna ask you one thing. I just wanna ask you one thing. I just wanna ask you one thing. One thing, baby. I want you to stop this rainbow in my eye.
Thank you. Now, in 1980, we had begun 2 years prior to that doing, putting an oldie from the 60s in each new album.
Uh-huh.
And somebody said, well, time for Rainbow again. I said, man, we've had a hit off it twice. Let's not push our luck. And they said, listen, remember what we're doing. We're just putting an oldie in each album.
Thank you. boys, you better grab, 'cause in a minute I'm coming no more. And I'm asking you, baby, 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 I'm asking, please.
Did you invite a whole bunch of friends into the studio, too, to make a lot of noise?
Not really, because I don't remember what day we did it or how. Because, you know, if you're doing an album, you're doing different days in the studio.
That's true.
So we did, so it was done, of course, quietly. There was no audience for the song. But the way it had been developed, I had developed it on the stage. We just did, I had the arranger to write from that.
Gotcha.
And he wrote it correctly to that, and... there was a song we were going for out of the album that was released prior to the album coming out, and it was called Does She Have a Friend for Me?
She's got style, she's got grace. I would do anything just to be in your place. You're my best friend, you know that. I would do you no wrong. There's a moon out tonight, and I don't wanna be alone. Maybe day in a show, we could come back to my place where the lights are down low. I know love is a gamble, got my eyes open wide, spin my heart like a wheel. I feel look at tonight. Oh,
let me shake off the blues. Here's a dime for the phone. I don't think she'll refuse. You're my best friend. I know that you would do me no wrong. I just want me a woman I could call on my own.
That's a great hook too.
Yeah, when the jocks received the whole album, and it said Rainbow 80 in the cover, they decided to put the needle on. This is 15 years later.
Gotcha.
They put the needle on that record, the studio version, and bing, it took off again.
Well, you know, hey, you know, but the point is, if it's good, it's good. I mean, you know, that's all. You know, I mean, I went all over Italy, you know, looking for the best spaghetti bolognese, and I found that everywhere I went. So the point is, you know, if it's good, it's good.
That's the story on the Rainbow.
Oh, that's a fabulous story. Just Be True.
Yeah.
That was a Curtis tune also, and Nothing Can Stop Me.
walking out. Cause you and your friends really hurt my pride. So unexpected, you shot me down. With all the fellas standing around, yeah. Please don't go. That's what they'll be saying.
Please don't go.
But I'm not playing, cause nothing can stop me.
Nothing Can Stop Me. Just Be True was another Curtis Mayfield song that I wanted to do. They didn't want me to do it.
Uh-huh.
I fought for that, and it came out on Constellation. The Abner had moved from VJ, took me with him to Constellation Records.
Uh-huh.
And that's where these songs that you're naming now came from. He wasn't no longer with VJ because of another problem with VJ.
Gotcha.
They thought that I was signed to them. I was actually signed to his personal label, and he put me on VJ. And, of course, I didn't even know that. But in any event, I ended up going with him to Constellation, his new label. That's what happened. We story is on Nothing Can Stop Me. A year or a year and a half, somewhere prior to that particular time, Curtis had written some songs for me. One of the songs was called Monkey Time.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I told him what I wanted, including Monkey Time, he said, well, our manager, Eddie Thomas, wanted us to do that one. I said, well, what you playing for me for? I just wanted you to hear it. I said, well, I love that song. He said, well, listen, you can have it if you can talk Eddie out of it, Eddie Thomas. And so Carl, my manager, knew him better, so I had Carl to talk to him. When I get home, Carl say, yes, I got all the songs you wanted, and I got Monkey Time, but I need a favor from you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Major Lance, on OK Records, which was distributed by, owned by Columbia Records, they said that if we don't get a hit off of Major in this recording session, they're going to drop his contract.
Wow, and what a great tune that is.
Right, we think that Monkey Time is...
great song.
So, Monkey Time ended up... so I gave it to Major Lance.
Wow, great story.
And of course, it was a hit record.
You bet it was.
And then the music began to play. Feel the groove coming on its way. Are you ready? Are you ready? Well, you can go, cause I've got time for the monkey time. Monkey time. Monkey time.
Now, from that point, here's a year later or something of that nature, and I'm at Carl's house, and he's playing some new songs that Curtis had written for Major Lance. In that was Nothing Can Stop Me. I say, Carl, turn about his fair play. I love that Nothing Can Stop Me.
Right.
He said, I don't see no reason why Major wouldn't let that go when you gave him the hit that kept him in the business.
There you go.
And so, of course, I did Nothing Can Stop Me, and it turned out to be a hit for me.
Wow. Now, you know, thinking about Monkey Time and thinking about all that funky music and those great players, did you have pretty much a set group of guys that backed you up musically when you went into the studio, or was it different people all the time?
No, it wasn't like a Motown or maybe
like,
one other label that they own studio musicians.
Right.
We did have some musicians, but they went in the studio and recorded with other people.
Right.
We didn't have our studio right there in the office. We used studios that were downtown.
Yeah.
And so we used different musicians for different sessions.
Right, I see. Because, you know, you were on Chess and also on Brunswick for a while, too.
When Hewitt Abner sold Constellation, he sold his masters to Chess Records.
I see.
I owed him one more album. Meanwhile, I had signed with Brunswick Records. I had just signed with them.
Gotcha.
This deal went down with Constellation. And so I had to complete an album. So I asked both companies, would they not try to fight each other by releasing records? And at least for this one album for Chess, would they wait till he released one, then you release one, so on and so forth? They agreed to it, and that's the way it went. And that's why I had those two labels at the same time. And that's how that went down. And finally, Chess released me from my agreement after they had got as much as they could out of that particular album. And, of course, I was strictly on Brunswick from that point.
It's amazing that you remember the chronology of this, because I talk to a lot of people in the business that have been around a long time, and they just say to me, tell me where to stand. No, I don't remember any of that. It's funny, you know, I'm really friendly for years, you know, with Shirley Alston Reeves. And I said to her, you know, you did a song with Joey D and the Starlight. It's called Face of an Angel. You guys were all in high school together, and the Shirelles sang the backup. She says, I wasn't there. I didn't know. I don't know about that. And I played it for her, and she says, yeah, that was us. She says, maybe, yeah. She says, I seem to remember something like that. So she says, I blocked all of that out. Now, I'm talking to Gene Chandler, and you remember it all. So... that's a wonderful thing. Are you going to write the book?
No, everybody wants me to write that book. I've been offered this, offered that, uh-huh. but it would be a monster, a humdinger.
I'm sure it would be a book and a movie.
Because I've done so many different things that are interesting, and some was dangerous, et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
The record business is a story within itself. Being in the service is a story within itself.
Right.
And to go in the service is a story. And I imagine since then. But no, I decided I wouldn't, because I'm a stand-up guy and I'm not going to drop dimes on other people.
I hear you.
In order to tell my story. Now, they've told me, don't use the real name and all that.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of people, when I get into certain areas, they'll know basically who I'm talking about and where I was at. And so I just decided, and I don't need the money, you know. So I'll just keep it to myself. Yeah.
Right. That's interesting. A very noble response. Now, I want to get to this part of our conversation, which is all of the wonderful tunes that you recorded that some people are aware of, some people are not aware of. Certainly, I was not aware of all of them. The wonderful, funky, groovy R&B, late 60s, early 70s type tunes that I just have my head filled up with. Let's talk about some of those tunes, because I ran them down and I listened to a bunch of tunes that I hadn't heard in a while. I Fooled You This Time.
Can be. You've got a taste of a pain. Hey, mama, for a change. Mama, I'm gonna be with my new summer one. At home, why you choose to roam? The last laugh is only you. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be with my new summer one.
Oh,
Man's Temptation. Those are some of the tunes that I'm talking about.
One more time to test the wheel power of me.
Power of me.
This feeling that I hold now just won't let me be.
Let me be.
This woman won't leave me alone. She's going to ruin my happy home with a man's temptation.
Oh.
Well, I've got another back home who's the beat in my heart. I never thought no one else could ever tear us apart.
Tear us apart.
To each other we had been so true. Until alone comes a lover like a you with a man's temptation. Strong. I've got to fight this all alone. So afraid for what I must do. I've got to hate my woman or you. Well, I've got a feeling telling me, let your heart be your guide.
Heart be.
I don't want to lose either one, which makes it hard to decide.
Hard to decide.
Though my mind continues to roam. Oh baby, my heart, it stays at home and controls my temptation. I'm sorry, little miss. That's the way love is. I'm sorry I can't stay. I must be on my way.
To Be a Lover was another tune.
To Be a Lover.
Not proven in many ways that with you is where I want to be. Haven't I shown you every day just how much you mean to me? But you keep on leading me astray. Is this the price that I have to pay to be a lover? Baby, to be a lover. Baby, haven't I done just what you wanted? Haven't I been there whenever you call? Haven't I tried to please you, baby? Haven't I given you my all in all? I ask myself every day, is this
it ain't new?
What's your favorite Gene Chandler tune?
Oh, gosh. That's tough. Well, automatically, it has to be Duke of Earl and Rain.
Okay, let's take that one out of the mix. Bless Our Love is a wonderful tune.
Not proven in many ways that with you is where I want to be. Haven't I shown you every day just how much you mean to me? But you keep on leading me astray. Is this the price that I have to pay to be a lover? Baby, to be a lover. Baby, haven't I done just what you wanted? Haven't I been there whenever you called? Haven't I tried to please you, baby? Haven't I given you my all in all? I ask myself every day,
different,
different.
At least that's what you let. me in disgrace. Now I stand here hurt terribly. But darling, think nothing about it. You've hurt me so what? It just proves you wasn't true.
Think nothing about it.
Cause you've hurt me too. You only prove you're no exception to the rule.
I didn't understand why that didn't take off, and then I listened to it years later. And
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, because some of this stuff, you know, I listened to again, you know, in a different vein, and, you know, I said, oh, my God, this stuff is just, like, fabulous. Can't Hurt Me No More is another tune. Now, of course, if you haven't heard Gene Chandler's version of There Was a Time, the James Brown tune, what a fabulous 4 or 5 minutes that is.
Yeah, I loved what James Brown did with that song, and I was looking for something fast to do to mix in with the slow songs that I do.
Right, but not everybody can pull that off.
You really have to have chops. I thought about it. I said, listen, I don't have to dance as long as James. I'll just do a portion of each one of the dance fall off. And I thought that would be something different coming from me. You always think of things that you can do on the stage that will excite the audience.
Right. Are you doing that in your show now?
No, I'm not doing it. I did do it last year where a guy wanted me to do an hour at one of the regular doo-wop concerts.
Right.
And it came off fantastic.
The dance I used to do, they call them mashed potatoes. Ah!
like that we do. The camel walk. Wow! Look at you. Now that was a dance that I used to do. Now the name of the dance they call a boogaloo. I may not do the dance as well as you, but you can bet your bottom dollar you never hear me holler. I do the best that I can do. Ah!
Wow, and now is, yeah, now we're in one of those shows of stuff. See, one of the problems is, and I found this, you know, when I was with the Mystics and I was with other groups, is, you know, when you're traveling around the country, you send your charts out and the band gets the charts and they promise that they look at it the week before and they don't, and they look at them at soundcheck. And if you have 40 minutes on stage and they're feeling their way through your charts for the first time, it could be a long night unless you bring somebody, a piano player or a guitar player with you. But, you know, that's, I guess, one of the things about working nowadays in different venues that you just have to put up with, you know?
Yeah, well, I have my drummer and keyboard.
Which makes all the difference in the world. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you're at the mercy of whichever the band is and the sound guys.
Right.
All of the Gene Chandler music, aside from Duke, is just a whole other world. And that's why, even though Duke of Roll was such a fabulous tune, and as I said, part of Americana, Gene Chandler needs to be celebrated for the wealth of material that's out there that hasn't been heard by the masses. And that's why people like me, who aren't singing anymore and are doing some radio, whatever, we need to get those tunes out there so that everybody can enjoy them. It just needs to be done. Any chance of going back into the studio and doing some new stuff?
No chance.
No chance. Okay, that's an interesting response.
I don't have any desire to go out there. I recognize how old I am, and I recognize now, even though I don't look that age, and I'm still moving around on the stage well, I always say when I can't perform the way I did before, then I'm not going on the stage. So far, I continue to perform, but companies don't really want to put a lot of promotion behind an older act.
I know.
You know, and so I would hate to go into the studio and record my heart out, and then it went out there and just went so-so, you know.
Right.
I'm used to a corner out there going across the country, and people are behind it and pushing it. So, and actually, you know, with my business interests, I don't really even have to be out there.
Right.
I'm out there because of the fans, the love of the fans, and I love them, and it's just a camaraderie that we have together, and if you're not out there, you kind of miss that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, being on stage is exciting. I miss it terribly. You know, I got remarried about 4 years ago, and I was calling Paulette from all, you know, Rhode Island and California and Boston, you know, and you know, it wasn't working out for a new marriage, so I just said, okay, I'm going to stop doing this, and then immediately I went back into the studio and I dabbled a little, and I started the radio show. And for me, it's interesting because I can call up a lot of the people that I worked on stage with and say, remember the time you fell into the bass drum? Remember the time? You know, a little more of the inside stuff than most of the normal things that you hear on radio. You know what I'm saying?
The thing about not going back in the studio,
mm-hmm.
I sing now better than ever.
Wow.
I mean, I'm so much better than I was in the past.
Wow.
And it would be the perfect time for me to record, but
gotcha.
Because of the other things, I just said I'm going to leave it alone and continue to go on the stage and show my improvement to the live audience.
Right, and that's because you've been warming up for you know, all those years. You know, because when you sing regularly, you know, your chops are there.
Let me tell you what I think makes it happen for
me. Go ahead.
And anybody else, if they try it.
Go ahead.
I am never satisfied with the last album. Never satisfied with the last show.
Uh-huh.
I'm always looking to improve my voice over whatever I did. I'm looking for little things that would make me better. And if I'm not better, then I'm not better, but at least I try. But most time, I come up with something new or something better to enhance my voice and the show.
Right. What? So a typical show for Gene, you know, obviously, now, it's funny because when you walk out with the hat and the cane, do you open up with Duke?
Oh, I close with the Duke.
Okay, so, you know, that's what I'm saying. So you come down with that, everybody expects it, and then you kind of shed that, and you go through your cartwheels and your turns, and you're motivating all over the stage, because I've seen it, and you do take over the stage, and then you close with Duke, which is great. Let's talk about Jerry Butler a little bit, because, you know, even on PBS, and the thing that made me smile is he smiled from ear to ear, and he said, "My very good friend, Mr. Gene Chandler." So you guys must be, like, really tight.
That's my best friend.
It's my pleasure to introduce to you my good friend, Mr. Gene Chandler, the Duke of all.
And that's a really good best friend to have. As a matter of fact, the fact that they picked Jerry Butler to be the host of that of PBS, you know, says an awful lot, because he's now become the voice of.
He's not a better guy. There are some good guys around, but he's one of the best, if not the best. And he's a good guy, and to be so level-headed in all the different things that he's been involved in and that he does, he's just a real nice, sweet guy. What can I tell you? And so I've known him since I went to VJ Records back in 1962, and we became closer as the years went by when I began to learn what kind of guy he was. You know?
Right. Well, let's talk about one of my favorite tunes, and I put the tune on just the other day because I knew that we were going to be having this talk, and Paulette, who is an aficionado, and when I met her, had a 57 Seberg jukebox sitting in the living room, and that's when I knew I was in love, when I walked into her house, and I said, "Oh, my God, got 250 vinyls in the house, all, you know, great stuff." So I put on Groovy Situation, and I cranked it up, and she said, "Ooh, I love that song. I love that song." Well, I said, you know, Gene Chandler, and, you know, there we go. Tell me about Groovy Situation.
You know, at one point, I was recording 25 acts and managing 15, and I was recording for different labels, MGM, A&M, Scepter One.
Wow.
I was all over the place, and I had my own label, Mr. Chan.
Uh-huh.
And so I've had there was a company in St. Louis called Bamboo Records. They had a song called "The Judge Show Is Funky." And when I took over, they were like around 50,000 in the hole, and somebody had been ripping them off. So I took over the company, and I had enough on my hands, but I took it over anyway.
Wow.
And the first big song was a million seller on Mel and Tim called "Backfill in Motion."
Right. Know it well.
And it was the same year I was on Mercury, and I produced myself with Groovy Situation.
Uh-huh.
So all of that was in 1970. As a matter of fact, I won the Producer's Award of the Year from the Natura.
Right. That was in 1970, right?
Correct.
I know about that.
And of course, I still have that.
Well, but of course,
I was producing all these acts at the same time. I was really hot during that time. It wasn't my intention to do it by myself. I had went to get Curtis Mayfield and Eugene Record to do some producing with me, the three of us.
Right.
Eugene Record had said he was leaving Brunswick, and he was looking for a place to go, and they were after him, and I was right there next to him, so, of course, I got him.
Uh-huh.
And that was Curtis Mayfield. He also agreed. But before all of my deals could go down, several months went by, Curtis started Curtom, and Eugene Record signed back with Brunswick. So now I'm sitting there stuck with all these acts and all these companies.
Wow.
I was with. That's how I happened to be by myself doing 25 acts and managing 15 of them.
That's amazing, because most people that are out there that are your peers and that are out there singing now have never had that experience of being on the other side of the desk, you know, and it's a total, you get to see it from both sides. I guess it's really an experience.
Yeah, I kind of took back from my career because I had too much on my hand, and I was recording night and day with two different arrangers.
Right.
And out of that came the big songs that came out right away was Groovy Situation and Backfill in Motion.
About a girl, I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night. Can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it? About a girl, gonna make a mind if it takes all night. Can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it? Good evening, sweet darling, may I ask your name? You seem to be lonely. Well, don't worry, I'm feeling the same. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination, that we should meet at a time like this. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination, you're something that I just can't miss. How about girl? I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night. Can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it? How about girl? I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night. Can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it? It's been a long time, sweet darling, since love has come my way. But I'm trying so hard to find the right words to say. Oh, it's a good situation and a splendid combination that we shouldn't at a time like a big year. Oh, it's a good situation, a splendid combination, you're something that I just can't miss. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination, that we should meet at a time like a big year. Oh, it's a groovy situation and a splendid combination, you're something that I just can't miss. Baby, baby, it's a groovy situation and a splendid combination that we should meet at a time like a day. Oh, it's a groovy situation and a splendid combination, you're something that.
And I was tight with all the jocks around the country because I always stopped to see the jocks. If I was on the road going from one city to the next in the car, mm-hmm. I would stop, get the call letters, call and find out the address of the station, and I would stop.
Gotcha.
And so I became very good friends with a lot of jocks around the country.
Right.
So when I started at the label, they immediately went on my product, and from that, the hits came.
Unbelievable. So
I actually didn't know that that was going to do me that good, you know, but what it was is they were playing my records, and I thought it would be a good idea, especially some of the small towns. Some of these jocks in small towns ended up going to big cities.
Oh, absolutely.
But they, I knew that they would be shocked to see me walk into their studio.
Absolutely there, too.
And I'd walk in, they'd say, Gene Chandler's out here.
Yeah.
What? You got to be kidding. And they would immediately put me on the air, and
right.
We would laugh, joke, and talk, and what have you.
Oh, you know, it all helps. Now, you, Chi Sound Records?
That came later on after, I left Carl and started my own label. My own label, Mr. Chan's, was Simtek and Wiley, Got to Get Over the Hump, and some other things. That I had, but with all of the product that I was doing, I ended up doing my own thing. And then came me going back on the road.
Right.
Al Davis and I got together again.
Uh-huh.
And he asked me to come back to the label.
Uh-huh.
And so I did. And I went back to the label from the Mercury label. And from there came... the disco.
That
That was the disco era.
The disco, which wasn't bad because, see, to me, the continuation of the doo-wop was the 70 R&B sound, like the Intruders, the Manhattans, those kind of groups. And then as you moved into the disco, I thought it was a blend of just big band. And because I'm a harmony guy, when you put harmonies into the disco, it really made sense to me rather than just get up, get down, get sideways. But there was a lot of great stuff that came out of all of those eras as well. You know, because good music is good music. I don't care where it comes from. Yeah. You know what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, well, my thoughts were, see, we were getting ready to put out an album.
Right.
I didn't have disco in my head, but I noticed that on the air, it was hard to get a slow record played.
Yeah.
All they were playing was disco.
Right, and now they were playing, like, tunes that were, like, 8 minutes long as well.
Right. And so I said to myself, I said, well, I don't want to put out an album and it died because they were, because see, they had put out some more albums, Carl had,
right,
some different kind of songs, and they weren't getting the airplay.
Gotcha.
That the disco records were. So I'd say, listen, I'm not going to go out of business just because they're putting out disco. I'm an artist.
Right.
And so I should be, I think I can sing anything, so let's go and do a disco. And that's what we did, and I made gold on it. What can I tell you?
Pretty good
record. And I was nominated for the Grammys. I didn't win.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the category it was in, but
right. But you were there. So, you know, hey, it all counts. You know, Duke of Earl, to go back to that, it actually knocked the twist out of the number one spot. Yeah.
And I always remember the one that knocked me out. Do you know which one knocked me out?
Yeah, Bruce Chanel. Hey, hey, baby. You know, all good records. I mean, just to be there. But, you know,
yeah.
But you want to know the truth? Hey, Baby doesn't get played as much as Duke of Earl today.
Oh, I noticed.
So.
I noticed that.
You know, I mean, that's one that gets, I mean, the twist is the twist, you know, but a lot of great records, just to look back, they don't get much airplay, and some of them get too much airplay. You know, it's like Sirius is starting to become like AM radio, where you can set your watch by Ricky Nelson at 5:30 every day. And I'm saying here, all of a sudden, a good thing became, you know, okay, here we go. It's the same old stuff. That's why most of the big DJs and a lot of the little ones are going to internet radio, which, believe it or not, will one day take over terrestrial radio because everything will be Wi-Fi. So, I mean, that's what they tell me. I just do it because I'm having fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because...
Well, for a long time, Duke of Earl was the most requested record each year.
Oh, absolutely.
It was in the top 10 of the most requested records, so... That helped quite a bit, too. And then, of course, the PBS special, when I did that, that just kicked it off all over again.
Right, 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 right. Let me ask you this. Did Gene Chandler ever do the Apollo?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool, man.
I even rented the Apollo out.
Wow, wow.
For a show for myself.
Oh, very cool.
That I paid for. But, no, the first time I did the Apollo, it was amazing. I had heard about it, and so I get to the Apollo Theater, and the biggest name on the marquee was the Duke of Earl.
Wow, wow, wow. Well, you know, it's...
The Isley Brothers and the Miracles
wow.
were on the show.
Wow. But that's because it's so much fun to say also.
The Isley Brothers and Miracles, they were upset because I was closing the show.
No kidding.
And they were arguing about themselves who was going to close the show.
Hey, the heck with Rudolph, man. He just had to go back to New Jersey, man. You just let a Chicago guy have some game, you know.
Jocko Henderson came to me.
Oh, yeah, Jocko.
It was his show.
Yeah, actually, you know, people don't know that Jocko was the first one to say Sakatumi.
Oh, okay.
He was the first one.
So he came to me and said, listen, this is your show to close.
Wow.
Those people are lined up coming to this show because of you.
Wow.
And you can close this show, but I'm having problems with Miracles, blah, blah, blah. Whatever you want to do is fine. I was so glad. I was so relieved because I was concerned about how I would come off in New York.
Wow.
I didn't want to be the last one coming on, and I flopped.
I hear you.
Because let me tell you something. When you hit each city, you say, okay, I did all this stuff and excited them there. How are they going to act over here?
No, I hear you.
You don't know until you hit all these places.
Right.
But in any event... I said, listen, let them close. As it turned out, I brought the house down each time.
Wow.
And I can't remember whether the Isley or the Miracles closed or right. whether they swapped each day and did it.
Right.
But I definitely brought the house down.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Smokey doesn't remember. So, but it's funny. That's a fabulous thing. How about, did you do shows with Clay Cole at Palisades Park?
No.
No? How about the Brooklyn Fox with Murray? Murray the K.
I did the Brooklyn Fox.
Very, very cool. That's all good stuff. Because, you know, I was a New York kid, so, I mean, we used to go to those shows, and I used to go to the Paramount and the Fox.
Did the Paramount also.
Oh, yeah. You know, those were the good places to be, you know. It's a fabulous thing. So you've been around and you've done it all. How do you think the business has changed since you were first out touring with Duke?
Well, some things for the better and some things not. As much as I can say about it, but everything progresses and becomes more modern and the way things are done. I mean, it was a time you could go to a record company and if they like your talent after hearing you, then they would sign you up and do all the things that were necessary
right.
to get off the ground.
Or if you had a tune, you could just go in there and hum it, and they say, yeah, we like it.
Yeah, but today you have to basically have your material finished when you go into a record company.
Yeah, and they want half the publishing. I know, you know, it's really hard to
listen. But they wouldn't get that, but in any event.
A lot of, you know, it's funny. Lloyd Price said to me, he said, I never sang a tune on the radio that I didn't write. Or record in my own studio, or produce, or own the publishing to. Every one of my hits, I owned lock, stock, and barrel. He said, and that's why I still have every dime. And I said, well, you're one of the few. Because the story, you know, you talk to most people, is that, you know, we were young, we didn't know what we were doing, we signed over there, and then, you know, as we read the contract years later, and the print got smaller and smaller, we found out that, you know, it wasn't what we thought it was. So, you know, that happened to a lot of young guys.
Yeah, it just so happened I never signed up for money.
Uh-huh.
I needed an advance. I got it. I never signed an extra extension onto my contract or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
And I would say the record came out in the latter part of 61, Duke of Earl did, and 1962, at least by March, it had been number one around the country on stations, all charts. But I decided that I would just... started my own publishing company, and I did that in 1966.
What a great move.
I started two publishing companies. One was ASCAP and one was BMI.
Right, right, you know, which is great. You know, and what's really funny, Mary Wilson I talked to quite often, and she was actually in Palm Beach, you know, over New Year's, and, you know, we talk, and she told me even during the 60s and even during the Supremes time that she was still having a tough time as far as working in the South and being in certain venues and whatever. She says she even had a thing where they were working the South. Diana Ross went into the deli and said, hey, listen, I'm Diana Ross. I'm not waiting on the bus and whatever. And they threw her out, and Len Barry from the Dovells had to go in and buy her a sandwich. And I said, I'm wondering if you experienced that kind of stuff even in 61 and later on through the 60s.
Because if I'm correct, I was out there before the Supremes.
Yes, you were.
And so I experienced all the racial things down in the South early.
That's amazing.
The Whites Bill wasn't passed until 1964 or something like that.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. Mel Carter once told me a situation in confidence that he was in California. He got stopped by state troopers, the Chips in California, who didn't believe that he was Mel Carter. And he was driving a Jaguar, you know, with his diamond cufflinks, going from a show to a show. And he said, look, I'm Mel Carter. I have a hit record. They beat him up. They put him in the hospital. And it took years and years in a court case for him. He won the court case. He said, but it just shows you how even in the modern day with a hit record, you could experience something like that. And he said he stopped singing for 2 or 3 years.
Well, he should have had the Duke.
It should have had the Duke.
Right. He should have had the Duke of Earl.
No, I understand that completely.
The girl saved me many a times.
No, it was hold me, thrill me, kiss me. Maybe the cops didn't want to buy that. you never know. You know, it's a funny thing.
Duke came through for me one time when it looked kind of dangerous. And
wow.
our guys, it was three of us, my drummer and my road guy.
Wow.
And the Duke pulled me out of the fire, I can tell you that.
You know, well, it's amazing. That's an amazing thing to have in your back pocket. And say,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm the Duke of Earl.
Young Doc Pop was the...
Nothing can stop me now.
His wife was a fan.
Uh-huh.
And these cops had us in the back of this police station down in Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And because he was a fan of Duke, he went and spoke up for me.
Wow.
And he said, whatever they decide to do, now I have to go along with them. But he said, I'm going to do my best. And he went back there and spoke up for me. And next thing you know, he said, here, take your stuff and get out of town as soon as possible. And that's what I did.
Wow. Well, you know, it's
you got to sign this album.
I hear you. Yeah, yeah. Everything changes after a minute when they realize who you are. But it's just funny that all of these little stories and behind-the-scenes things and even, you know, back in the dressing room kind of things, people don't understand. They think that they wind you up and they send you out on stage and you sing the Duke of Earl and whatever, and then they put you away in this glass case. But that's not how it is. I mean, there are all these other things that go along with it. Other than just going around the country singing, you've been quite successful in doing some other things around the country. Would you care to talk about that for a minute?
Well, I just have real estate all across the country, and I have my own condo down in Fort Lauderdale across the street from the Atlantic Ocean.
Was that you? Because I'm up in Wellington, you know, and we're down there all the time.
Yeah, and it's just great. I don't get down as often as I'd like to, but I always enjoyed being down there just meditating and sitting back, looking out all over Fort Lauderdale there in my side balcony. I'm looking at the ocean, and so it's just great.
Yeah, no, you know, I love it too. Well, you know, the next time you're down in Lauderdale and, you know, you got a spare minute, you give me a call and we'll go down, we'll grab some Italian food or whatever and we'll talk
about that. Where are you located at?
I'm in Wellington. I was in Boca for 12 years.
Okay.
When Paulette and I got married, we moved to Wellington, which is, so it's
north of Boca?
It's a little north of Boca, maybe about 6 or 8 minutes north.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like horse country. There's a lot of the equestrians are here in Wellington. And it's different than Boca, where people, you know, you're online in Publix and people actually say, oh, no, you go first. Oh, no, you take that space. It's not like Boca. See, Boca, you know, it's, I always say about Boca living there 12 years, it's me, 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 me.
We bought a lot of furniture.
Me, 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 me. But you know what? Enough about me. Let's talk about you. How do you feel about me?
I was going to say sometime when I'm down there, because that's what we do most. Is eat. We have these different restaurants.
Oh man!
Each night.
I'm sure that we could both run the list and come up with all the good, because that's what it is down here. Restaurants are fabulous down here.
Right, and of course the Blue Martini.
Oh yeah, of course the Blue Martini. Of course, I know exactly where it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. You know. So let me ask you this. What would Gene Chandler like to say to Gene Chandler fans that have been your fans over the years? What would you like to say to them?
Well, I've been very blessed to have them, and of course I love them, and I appreciate their love for me. And I will try to do, I've cut down on the shows, but I'm going to try to continue to do as many as I can so I continue to get that love from them and give love back.
It's a good thing. Well, Gene, it's been so great talking to you, and spending time with you has been a pleasure, and I hope we get to do it again, and I hope to see you when you're in Lauderdale or at a show nearby. Take care now.
Mike, all right.
Hey, Gene, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Ciao.
And remember how you climbed the stairs. It seems that I always knew, oh, the moment that you were there. Oh, but now, oh, that's gone. And I sit here at home, oh, I'm waiting to
sometimes free, stop in, and when they do, all I do is talk. I just talk to them about you. Each night before I go to bed, I turn my lights down low, and I get a little sweet music on my radio, and I'm waiting to hear those familiar footsteps. I'm waiting to hear those familiar footsteps. I'm hoping and waiting to hear those familiar footsteps. I'm waiting to hear those familiar footsteps. There's a girl, and that's not all. She lives next door. And just the other day, the little girl, she walked by my door. I reached the door so fast, hey, I must have flew. And I was so hurt, shocked to find that it wasn't you. I'm still hoping and waiting to
you. see the pain and the hurt is getting stronger. I can't take it too much longer.
Thank you. never heard, baby. And you build up my desire, baby. But you starve my love too long, and my feelings are so strong. Second nature to you,
nature.
Baby. So let me make love to you, baby. Decisions up to you, honey. So let your feelings show.
If I could just do the things to you that I've always dreamed of.